afternoon, and welcome to We the People. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Team Power. Team Power is our local John Deere Kubota dealer up in Shasta Lake, California. They're on 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake, just south of Phil's Propeller. Anything tractors, they can do it. If you're looking for a new tractor, want to trade in an old one, want to fix an old one, I know we're getting a lot of calls on machines that have been burned up in the fire, and we can help you with that process.
Need quotes for replacement and all that.
Yep, insurance quotes for replacement or repair. We can handle that. And also, just to let you know, we're working with Deere and Kubota to possibly throw some extra discounts for fire victims if you need to replace your tractor. So keep us in line on that. And you can reach them on the web at weddingtractors.com. And their phone number is 226-9226. That's Team Power.
Nice. I didn't even interrupt you.
No, you did good. I didn't even look at you.
I did look at you.
I didn't look at you.
Oh, yeah. See, that's the trick.
Makes me, yeah. Makes
Don't look over.
Yeah.
So distracting.
You are.
Oh, my goodness. So, let's see. I sound really loud all of a sudden. Why am I so loud there? I know people have been asking me that my whole life. Why are you all so loud?
Why do you sound like Ethel Merman?
It's a family problem. So you can't even use that anymore.
I know, because nobody knows who Ethel Merman is.
Yeah, I had a neighbor who used to say I had a voice like Ethel Merman. And she said it just like that, and she's making fun of me.
I think the Poseidon Adventure was the last time I saw Ethel Merman screaming on the way down. Yeah.
Or it's a mad, 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 mad world, which should be a cult classic by now. And I don't know why so many people have not seen it, although it was the best movie ever.
The Big W.
The Big W. All right. So today we're talking about the Big S.A., South Africa.
Yeah.
And we have some actually like late breaking news.
Very late breaking as of hours
this morning.
Ago. Yeah.
And I'm not going to mess that up. I'm going to let our guests tell you all about it. So let's see. This would be the, hold on, 1, 2, 3, 4. This would be the fifth show we have done on this topic. Some were an hour, some were two. And I've got those linked up on today's page. So if you just go to wethepeopleradio.us, you look at today, August 12th, you will, you'll have links to all of those. We've talked about the history of the Dutch. We kind of, I mean, believe it or not, I mean, we have a ton more to do on that one. We talked about the farm attacks that are going on in South Africa. So I don't know if you are aware of that. If you're not, that is, if you think that what's going on in the West is a problem, you should tune in on South Africa, because that's a whole different level of
violence.
Yeah, just horrible.
Mayhem.
And
yeah, and I'm hoping all these shows we're doing is bringing a little bit more national spotlight to it.
Well, it's interesting because I noticed that listenership has gone way up when we do these shows. So I think a lot of this information isn't being talked about in any type of, you know, at any type of length. I think you have articles out periodically, and I don't know what's happening on radio. I know our guest is doing lots of different radio. We also talked about the politics of white genocide, because that's actually what's going on. And then President Obama was down there, I'm going to say a month ago.
Yeah.
I don't know. And, you know, fanning the flames of white genocide. So if you think that this is all about, you know, kind of like a revamp or a redo of U.S. history, where some white people went to South Africa and enslaved black people and stole their land, blah, 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 and now they're just getting what's coming to them.
Yeah, and then Nelson Mandela came along and saved everybody.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, you really couldn't be more wrong on every single level. And so nothing like some good information to counteract either what you've been told, what you've heard, or what you've assumed. And I think in a lot of cases we do assume. You know, we overlay what we know and park somebody else in our history. So Dr. Harry Booyens is an internationally recognized multiple award-winning PhD defense and aerospace physicist. So he isn't just some guy who's talking about South Africa. I mean, he's an actual Cold War scientist who did all sorts of interesting things. We've had some really interesting phone calls. He is originally from South Africa with a 360-year bloodline in that country, He lives there. He currently lives in Canada with his family at the present time. He was in South Africa for, I believe it was 47 years. I don't know why that's not on here. But his life as a scientist exposed him to many of the realities of the Cold War and the period immediately following the fall of the Berlin Wall. It included interaction with the United States and British defense establishment. And so he's applied his lifetime of research and interpretive skills to history and genealogy, and he writes with factual accuracy and a really engaging style on these subjects. I mean, if you think he's fun to listen to, you should read some of his writing. We have listed on our website his book, Amabulu. I think I actually got it right before I second-guessed myself. The Birth and Death of the Second America. The parallels between the United States and South Africa are incredible. And I'm sure we can't go through all of that right here in a thumbnail, but we have done programming on that. I hope you'll listen. We have all of our archives are commercial-free. They are free to listen to. I know sometimes you have to subscribe and all that stuff. You don't have to log in or subscribe or do anything. You just click on them and listen. And they're free for you to download if you are somebody who can download an MP3 file and listen while you're, you know, working out or doing other things. Our archives are set up just for you. And each show has a page, so we have put all the pertinent information on there. And I will be adding an article from the New York Times on here and also some information that came through this morning. So that's all my part. Now we're out. Now it's all about Harry. And you have like 3 minutes before our first break, so you want to just kind of set the stage for us?
That I will do. And good morning, Aaron. Good morning, Bill. And good morning to your listeners. Yes, indeed. I'm what might be called an escaped Cold War warrior. And yes, I spent 47 years in South Africa. Your maths is correct.
I thought so.
And maybe the way I should use these 3 minutes is to say that today is quite significant. You've already hinted at it, in that the list of 195 farms that the South African government is trying to dispossess white people of without compensation, that list has escaped. It is in the hands of organizations that look after the interests of farmers. They've got those on the web. They've got it with little blocks to fill in to find out whether you are the target or not. That's where we are. In this high-tech world of today, the threatened farmer whose life now hangs in the balance has this morning to wake up and quickly fill his name into a block on the internet, find out whether the government is coming to just simply take his land and drive him off it. That's where we are now, finally, in South Africa. So wow. If you think the things that happened in northern Nevada and those places are terrible, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Yeah, this is like epic proportion.
Now, to understand all of that, I'm hoping today, if you'll allow me, to go back and sketch the picture behind all of this and to make the case for why the time has come for the United States to put pressure on that government in South Africa. That place has gone nuts, and it's time for the U.S. to make like it's the leader in the world.
All right. Make the case. Because I think it's like D-Day. Maybe we should. That's why we have Ashley. She's like our. She's our fun killer. They just call her the engineer, but she's really the fun killer. She just gave me the high sign. Okay, so let's take a quick break so we don't have to interrupt, and then we'll come back and start again with Dr. Harry Bouillons. And we're talking about South Africa today. You can find us online, WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Radio. I'm ready.
Well, when I put that in the queue for last night, I didn't know we were only going to hear bad news, but I guess I had a sneaking suspicion. All right, so where should we go now?
Maybe we could...
see in the cone of silence?
Oh,
there you are.
Yeah, there we go.
I'm right here. I don't know when I'm allowed to speak.
Okay.
Oh, anytime. Just
could you give
you
us
know,
a quick
perfection
a
is our
quick,
goal.
Who's who of the leader of South Africa, the Cyril Ramaphosa? Is that how you pronounce it?
Let me put that in context for you. The president now is a guy called Cyril Ramaphosa.
Right.
He was Nelson Mandela's understudy. He was also the guy who negotiated the new South Africa with the previous government. As far as I'm concerned, he ran rings around them. And he was the man that Mandela actually wanted should follow him up. And it didn't work out back in 1999. And instead of Ramaphosa, it was a guy called Thabo Mbeki who got the president. Mbeki was removed hook, line, and sinker by Jacob Zuma, who turned out to be a classic African village chief, corrupt kind of creature. And he's been removed now by Ramaphosa. There was a cipher-type placeholder in between Mbeki and Zuma, but that doesn't really count. So the point that's important here is that we're dealing here with Mandela's preferred successor.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
he's
good.
A competent guy. He's a competent guy, make no mistake. Unlike his predecessors, he's not from one of the two biggest black nations in South Africa. People don't seem to realize there are at least nine different nations, each with his own language. So it's a little United Nations kind of thing there. And he is from the Venda people in the very far north of the country. And as irony tends to do so often in South Africa, his people arrived at the far northeastern end of South Africa almost simultaneously with when the Dutch arrived at the far southwestern tip. So go figure that a bit. Okay.
Okay.
So that's where we are now. That's who he is. That's where he fits. And what you need to know is that because his immediate predecessor, Zuma, who was a Zulu, because Zuma was removed from his seat before his term was up, there is still an election due, essentially, next year. And Ramaphosa would have to fight an election. And so, obviously, the question for these folks was, who can work up the basic backwater black crowd the loudest and the strongest, and what would be the means to do it? And the answer is, sick the dogs on the whites. Make everybody jump up and down and bay for blood. Promise you'll steal things from the white people, and the unthinking masses will vote for you. That's what's going on here. You need to get that straight.
Okay.
And so far, it's kind of been working out for them.
Well, on a continent where rational thought and deductive reasoning are not exactly at the top of the list, trying to argue around these things doesn't really help very much. Aaron, I sent you a link to what I can best describe as a weird, screaming black young lady. Don't know if you took a look at that link. That is what we're up against. It's essentially the African version of Antifa.
Yeah, they're just crazed, I guess.
Okay. So, welcome. You're sort of getting little bits of that in the U.S. In South Africa, it has a totally different connotation. There it's the majority, and they want you dead.
Yeah, the interesting part, it's funny because just as we were coming into the studio, the previous show was leaving and they were making a comment about Antifa and those guys got clobbered up in Portland. So, I mean, we're still able to push ours back, but The tables are totally flipped down there.
I shall never call for violence on the air. I shall never call for it in any meeting, but now and then somebody needs to be tapped lightly around the ears.
Mm-hmm. So this fella is basically an understudy of Mandela. Is this anti-white position? Was that Mandela's position as well, or is this something new?
Well, there is an unpopular line of thought in South Africa and in the world, and that unpopular line of thought goes something like, well, Mandela bamboozled the entire planet with the, aided and abetted by folks that were actually in the Obama administration, who carefully removed Mandela's communist involvement and his leadership of part of that party. They removed it from his books, and by the time the United States found out about Mandela, he walked on water. The rest of us who lived in reality knew the truth. And so now the problem is that for guys in South Africa who always knew that Mandela was a leader in the Communist Party, none of this, including Ramaphosa's insistence on essentially nationalizing white property, none of that comes as a surprise. For those who were deluded by what Richard Stengel did when he wrote Mandela's book for him secretly, well, not secretly, but he was the ghostwriter, those people are probably in some degree of shock now that they see what the real agenda behind Mandela actually was.
Sounds like it was a little bit of a repeat of the Castro story. I mean, we backed him, and then he turns out to be a communist.
I'm not that familiar with Castro's, except that I know what he did in Africa, because guys like me had to fight against him.
Hmm.
It's difficult. This is what makes it so tough to talk about South Africa. To be blunt, you folks in the U.S. have been BS'd to such a tremendous degree by the combination of your media and the ANC and its unmentioned headquarters in London that for me to get the slightest fact across, I have to correct 40, 50, 60 years of rubbish.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
This is the problem we have. It's also the reason why I wrote the book. And if I may, I would now like to go back to a little event in my own personal life, and I don't want to make this about me, but it will illustrate something. The final straw that made me pack up my family, give up a successful career, and move to Canada was when a person who was placed in the environment by the ANC as part of their so-called cadre deployment. They actually have words for this, right? As part of their cadre deployment, this guy was placed in our work environment. Now, what you need to understand is that is exactly the same thing as the KGB political officer that's placed on a Soviet submarine. The captain has no real say. He's got to go with what the agent says. So the problem is these guys were in our environment, placed there already by the year 2000 and before it. And this one, in front of black, Indian, and what in South Africa is called colored people, who I can subpoena as my witnesses, because they stood there pretty much trembling in fear, this guy looked me straight in my eyes and told me, "No, Harry, our plan is not just to get rid of the president of this company. Our plan is to get rid of everybody like you."
Wow. That's subtle.
Yeah.
And that is why I wrote in an original article.
Oh, that would be Bill's phone. It's probably the telemarketer calling again.
Somewhere back in 2006, I wrote an article when I said the reality was stenciled into my forehead. It's not like I have to speculate. It's not like I have to hear other people's opinion. Okay? This monster, I'm talking about the machine that is the ANC, much like Hillary has a machine. The ANC machine stenciled it into my forehead. I had to be deaf, dumb, and blind not to get the message. And the other people in that room, of all colors in that country, stood there too scared to open their yaps. Caught between their respect for me and their fear of the ANC. Or as the Indian chap told me afterwards, "Harry, I was clearly not white enough for the previous government. Now I'm not black enough for this one." I'm talking about the year 2000, 18 years ago, before many of these Antifa kids were even born.
Wow. And it's only gone downhill from there.
Yeah, so I knew it was coming. And at first I put together a new life for my family in Canada. And then my conscience got to me about, I cannot just sit here. I got to do something. And I got to stay within the law and within reason and within decency. What can I do? And the answer is, Harry, you're a scientist. You have a love of history. You love this genealogy thing. Why don't you use genealogy as the basis to work back through history to find out who was who in the zoo in your own tree, then place them at the events in the history of South Africa and write their story down along with all the hard, vicious, supporting evidence that no one can deny, including the British Hansard and the actual letters of governors and things like that. So the hard, hard evidence. Put that into a book and give that to the world under the title, When We're Dead, Maybe You'll Read This.
God. Yeah, maybe once they've achieved their goal.
And so I slowly, it took me 7 years to put this thing together. I eventually published it at the end of 2013. As an e-book, a lot of people got hold of me and said, no, we want a printed one. So I knew that was going to be a problem at 630 pages. But that's what happens if you have to speak the truth and provide the hard evidence. And I don't know of anybody else who's ever plotted his own family all the way through a history of a country in order to just simply prove these guys were real, they really lived, and honest to God, this is what happened to them. Will you hear us, please? You know? So I wrote all of that down, and it turned out to be this big thing that I say can serve as a doorstop or as what the police call a blunt object. You know, like I quit last time that I got on the stage about 6 weeks ago, held up my book in my right hand, held up Mandela's in my left, and I said, in the inimitable words of your president, mine's bigger.
and on that note, let's take a quick break. Oh, dire topic, gotta have some jokes. We are discussing South Africa with Dr. Harry Bullions. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. We the People Radio.us.
On Marrakesh Express. Don't you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? They're taking me to Marrakesh. Don't you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? You know, we're riding on the Marrakesh Express. They're taking me to Marrakesh. All on board the train. All on board the train. All on board.
Rockefeller, Campanella, Communist Bloc, Roy Khan, One for All, Toscanini, Dacron, Dingin, Boo Falls, Rock Around the Clock, Einstein, James Dean, Brooklyn, Down a Winning Team, Davy Crockett, Peter Pan, Elvis Presley, Disneyland, Bardo, Budapest, Alabama, Khrushchev, Princess Grace, Peyton Grace, Trouble in the Suez.
We didn't start the fire, it was always burning since the world returned.
Kind of a fitting song.
Yeah, but you left out the best line, Belgians in the Congo.
I know. I couldn't get the Belgians in the Congo. They were in a different verse.
Yeah.
I had to go for the communist rock part.
Yeah. Harry, I'm curious. When you left South Africa, you went to Canada. Why did you pick Canada?
Well, there's a tongue-in-the-cheek response, and then there's the practical one. The practical response is that I'm the kind of guy, I can't just live. I can't just exist. And to me, the idea of building a country is very important. It's part of my whole soul and being. And I felt like Canada was a place where I could still make a difference and where they would give me a chance to be a citizen. And it wouldn't take half my life to get to that point. And in addition to that, Canada still has something of a frontier feel to it, and that's something that's important to me as well. So I wasn't here long before I was in a car and up to the Yukon. You know, it's
mm-hmm. Oh, fun.
That's who I am.
Well, you know, we're busy burning down every tree that's been hugged for the last, you know, several decades. So if you ever, you know, have a burning desire to live on the moon, you could come to the West Coast and, you know, experience what that would be like.
Or you can go to the South where they're busy tearing down all the historic statues and rewriting history.
Yeah.
Maybe we could rewrite some new
you just carve
Dutch
out a
history.
Little... Yeah, carve out... Yeah, we could have new Dutch history. Why not?
Yeah.
Okay, so you wanted to tie up some loose ends for us.
Yes. I feel strongly that, you know, I had an experience on a video interview the other day where the thing was... I think fraught with assumptions, and the phrase that was used was modern South Africa is about Mandela. Well, you know what? What about the previous 4 decades of my life, which had nothing to do with them? Anyway, so let alone the other 300 and something years. And everything that led to today's South Africa and everything that's being thrown against people and everything that's used as an excuse comes from before Mandela. So if people are going to start with Mandela, then they're going to start with all these assumptions that you've been fed. You know, mm-hmm. As far as I'm concerned, the Western world drank the Kool-Aid. And so I had hoped at some point to try and give you the essential points of the South African historic background that pertain to the mess that we have now. Right. It's not as though I want to tell you the history of who lived where and which tree did he go and walk around. It's it has to do with the bits that count. So if you'll indulge me on that, that's where I'd like to go.
Sure.
And hopefully folks will then understand why this situation is so absolutely outrageous. Here's the thing. When the Portuguese sailed, I'm actually going to go back to the year 1488. Won't believe this. But when Odias sailed to find the route to the Indies, East Indies, as fate would have it, he got as far as my old birth town of birth, my old hometown, Port Elizabeth, at the end of South Africa. And for this, it's probably important to have just a mental idea of what the country looks like. The southern half of South Africa looks a little bit like an upside down triangle of which you've cut off the sharp bottom bit, so it's half a triangle. And Port Elizabeth is at the bottom of the eastern end of the bottom. So you have the south coast that's about 400-500 miles long. And Cape Town is at the western end. Port Elizabeth, that's the eastern end. Dyer's got as far as Port Elizabeth, very roughly. And near it, about 80 miles or so east of Port Elizabeth, is the Fish River, the Great Fish River. And that thing is incredibly important because that is where this is going to turn into war at that point. I'm telling you that now. The thing is, his men wanted to mutiny at that point because they thought they're going to sail off the end of the earth. So that was where he turned, and just a couple of miles west of that, he put a stone cross on the dune, and that stone cross was discovered much later. So that's where things turn. The significant thing here is that he, on the way to that point, stopped at this spot called Mossel Bay, which is halfway along that southern coast. And he managed somehow to end up in a fight with the Khoi people, who used to be called the Hottentots, and he managed to kill one of them with a crossbow. So that's how the Portuguese started in Africa. They managed to kill a guy with a crossbow. That's a great start. You know,
how to win friends and influence people.
So, yeah, exactly. And they'd been blown off course by a typical winter storm around the Cape, and they called it the Cape of Storms. When they got back home, the king told them, no. We have to do a lot more exploring, and I can't afford to call it the Cape of Storms, so we'll call it something positive, like the Cape of Good Hope. And that was King Henry the Navigator. So he changed it to the Cape of Good Hope. And then he sent Vasco da Gama, who did make it all the way to India. And on the way back, he also stopped at that Mossel Bay. And in his case, it got so bad, he fired a cannon at the Hottentot. So it just wasn't working great for the Portuguese. Like they just couldn't get on with the Hottentot. Now, these folks are spindly, relatively short people who mostly, the ones that they met, were hunter-gatherers or beachcombers. And so from the perspective of the Portuguese, these people were not prospective slaves. They're not built for the job. And they're being blown about by storms and things. And so the Portuguese decided this whole southern tip of Africa thing is for the birds. We want nothing to do with it. We are going to sail way out to the south and west and then round the tip of Africa without ever seeing land. And then we're going to land the first time round about where Mozambique is today. But the point is, on those two trips, they didn't see black people. I'll say that again slowly. On those two trips, nowhere in what is today South Africa did they see black people.
Interesting.
Okay. Now, fast forward 150 years. Is that fast enough? The Dutch settled the Cape. In that period, just before the Dutch got there, there were a couple of Portuguese shipwrecks because they tried to miss out that coast, and then big storms come up. Sometimes it's remnants of cyclones. And they got blown against that coast and obviously got shipwrecked there. And there's at least two accounts of people trying to walk all the way to Mozambique and most of them dying. And it's a gripping account of what happened and how they were turned to cannibalism and all kinds of things. And it's quite clear that the first time they meet black people is where Natal is today. That is the easternmost coastal province of South Africa, Zululand, basically, Zulu territory. And there was no such nation as the Zulu back then. The Zulu came much later. So I think the people were called the Mbo. MBO.
I mean, what's the terrain like there? Is it basic desert, high desert, or low, or ocean desert? Or?
Okay, so the lay of the land. I mentioned it's like an upside down triangle with a bottom half lobbed off.
Right.
Here, along the east coast, you have a hot or a warm sea current, making it subtropical and quite moist and quite wet, which tell you that the black people have the wet country that is arable. And then the west coast has a cold current, which, you know, is everything like you see on the coast of South America, where you have the Atacama Desert. Mm-hmm. We have the Namib Desert. So west coasts tend to be deserts, east coasts tend to be subtropical at that latitude. By the way, if you took South Africa and you moved it at the same distance from the equator, but in the northern hemisphere, then the southern bit of South Africa would stick into the south of the United States, and the bulk of it would be on Mexico. You got a feel for that?
Mm. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Likewise, distance from the equator, temperatures, structure, the lay of the land, climate, that stuff will follow mostly Mexico and then southern United States. So I grew up in what is essentially the equivalent of Arizona, southern Arizona. There are no pine trees in South Africa. In the time of the Portuguese, if I may use that phrase, up to before 1650, nobody ran into black people until they got deep into what is now the subtropical coast of Natal. Wonderful country, very wobbly. In some respects, it looks a little bit like the coast of Alabama, which I've driven through. The same sort of wobbliness with bush and trees in the dips between the hills. Now, then came the Dutch. And around 1680, I think 1678, maybe that vicinity, there was a ship that wrecked, a Dutch ship. And the guys from the shipwreck started walking to try and get to the Cape, but in the process they discovered people from two other shipwrecks, a British one and a French one. And when they got back to the Cape, they gave an account of their travels through that territory. And that confirmed that the nearest black people were far north in what is now Natal. This is probably time for you to take a break, so I'll stop there.
This Skype thing is working out great. I think that's something that people really need to understand, because country that wasn't taken from people shouldn't be taken back by those people. Except we have kind of a history in this country of, I don't know, it's confusing. Anyway, we'll be right back with our guest, Harry Bouillons. We're talking about South Africa. All the information about today's show, including the archive after the show, will be at wethepeopleradio.us. To inject a little USSR in there. Okay, back to the story. I won't derail you.
Okay. I've taken us sort of to near the end of the 1600s, I hope quick enough.
The interesting part about this, Harry, is up to this point, there still aren't any white people there. Or black people there.
Yeah,
that's the point. So, and here's the thing, and what makes the writing of the book for me such an incredible experience is that as I went along, I realized my own blood family were kind of at the forefront of some of these events. I didn't have somebody on that shipwreck but that I mentioned, but it was 1702, it was the year 1702, that white guys who had first landed at the Cape in 1652, a full 50 years before they met the first black people overland, and they did so somewhere between 500 and 600 miles west of Cape Town. Just to give you a feel for that, more or less where that Fish River is. That Fish River is always the place where the line gets drawn. Now, the history goes on, and there's all kinds of fun and intriguing things that happen that we can talk about, and I can tell you what a direct role the Cape played, for example, in your own War of Independence. If the French hadn't taken the Cape, you probably would have lost your War of Independence. But it was 1778 when the Dutch commander at the Cape, or governor he was called already by then, actually personally went out to that border and negotiated the frontier with those people. And it was decided that the Fish River would be the frontier. That's it. And for hundreds of years after that, the fights were always around the Fish River. Fish River was the boundary. So the next important point is that we get to the early 1790s. At that point, the Dutch East India Company, which had founded the Cape and on which everything had been built, was basically bankrupt. and its government at the Cape was equally useless. And the folks who lived on that border, these frontier guys, these were typically my ancestors. They're all over that place. And they rose up and physically ran the Dutch East India Company magistrate out of town. So they ran the sheriff out of town, if you wish. Well, he's actually a combination sheriff and judge. So this guy, almost the same time as what he gets to the Cape, on a Sunday in 1795, a message arrives via a purser from a British ship in False Bay outside Cape Town. And that message is, I am on the ship, I am a British commander sent by the King of England, and here is a letter that says you should deliver your colony to me. It's a nice letter to receive.
Yeah, welcome.
The Dutch command. Well, it's like the equivalent of what happened in 1664 in New York, isn't it? Mm-hmm. The British say the harbor and say, give it up. So they did the same thing over there. But apparently the letter was legit because the Dutch king had been driven out of Holland by the French, had fled to England, and the British had quickly pressed him to deliver such a letter so they could quickly grab all the Dutch places across the world and use them against the French. Having suffered the consequences of losing the Cape to the French during your War of Independence, they weren't going to tolerate this a second time. This time, they're nailing the door shut before Napoleon can take it. That was the argument. Now, as fate would have it, this happens at exactly the same moment that my folks rebelled on the eastern limit of the colony. And so through the eyes of the Brits, my ancestors were French Jacobins, in other words, people who chop your heads off. And so the Brits experienced them as their mortal enemy. And it's at that point that the first British governor commits to paper the following statement. So if you want to know where racial animosity and how it comes from and how it gets born, here's how it happens. This is a letter from the British governor to his boss in London in 1795, roughly. He says, I'm going to quote verbatim, "Amongst the measures which I have been anxious to carry into effect for some time past has been that of collecting and arming a body of Hottentots. Nothing I know would intimidate the Boers of the country more. I have assurance of near 200 arrived some days ago. I have promised to arm and clothe them, give them rations and sixpence a week, on condition of their engaging not to quit His Majesty's service for a year." Do you want it any more in your face and blunt than that? Okay, so imagine, in American terms, that the regular American guys are going about their normal thing on a very dangerous frontier, and the British governor, having won the War of Independence in this alternative universe where the Cape was not in your picture, this British governor sends a letter to London and says, you know, I am arming the Cherokee to oppress and basically suppress your guys. Smart move, huh?
Yeah, kind of lays out what they, I mean, honestly, the future of the country and the manipulation you guys are going
to
be.
Draw the lines.
And if you want to know, a little bit later, people ask me why the subtitle of my book is The Birth and Death of the Second America. Here is the reason. 1797, Admiral Pringle at the Cape. British Admiral Pringle, the boss of the later Nelson, the famous Nelson, this is his boss, and he writes, "As the colony improved and its peoples increased, it would to us only prove a second America, and would more likely in time rob us of India." How do you like that? So
yep.
That's the reason why you've got to sit on the necks of these guys, make sure it doesn't turn into another America. So whether you guys want to know it or not, we're your little cousin, and this is what got done to us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
The difference being the British one.
Yeah, you have no idea what... Maybe this gives you some feeling for what would have happened if you had lost your War of Independence. Okay, so the history goes on, and you can see that people are smarting. The governor sends his men to go and put down the so-called rebellion. It wasn't a rebellion against the British. They were glad that the Brits had really arrived. They didn't want these hapless Dutch any further. These guys couldn't manage the border. The Brits at least are prepared to shoot. And look what the new guys do. They misunderstand completely who's who in the zoo. They send the British army to disarm the frontier men. Can you imagine a British army being sent to disarm Davy Crockett?
Yeah, that's not going to go over very well.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and that's what happened. And they told the guys, if you give up your arms, we'll be completely lenient. All will be forgotten. And when the guys did that, they put them on a ship, appropriately called the Rattlesnake. And the Rattlesnake took them to Cape Town and put them in the castle jail. And that's where my ancestral brother then went. And he had to live in that jail for 2 years for kicking out the magistrate out of town and for the Brits not understanding who's who in the zoo. End result, what happens when you disarm your frontier? What kind of how big a genius do you have to be to understand if you disarm, if you take away the defenses of your frontier, someone's going to invade? And that's exactly what happened. Those black folks on the frontier, they were over the frontier in a flash with the help of some of the Hottentot near the eastern boundary. And there was a massacre of my own ancestors. And, a lot of interesting stuff happened that the present ANC government would not want people to know about. For example, they would not want people to know that in the first two wars between white and black, the ANC's main human base, the main human material, actually fought on the side of these ancestors of mine against others. They would not want to know that Makrota King defended my wife's ancestors, gave them safe harbor, sent captains to protect them.
Wow, yeah, that kind of messes up the narration a little bit. We're going to take a hard break right here.
But it does make sense. Yeah, it definitely makes sense of what's going on.
Right.
All right. We're going to come back with more from our guest, Dr. Harry Booyans. We're talking about South Africa again today. And I hope you're learning something. If you need backstory, we've obviously talked about other things on this topic. You can go to our website, wethepeopleradio.us, and it is all there for you. We'll be right back.